Well, hey, I am so glad to be here, and I am thrilled to start a brand new sermon series called Lessons from a Toilet Overflow. I expected a few more laughs from that one, but I guess we were all laughed out from last week. Hey, let me show you. Here's my inspiration for these next 4 weeks. This is, in case you can't see it, this is a toilet handle. And the next 4 weeks will be brought to you by this faulty toilet handle. Now, you're probably wondering, all right, where is he possibly going with this? So for those that don't know, March 9th, 2021, I woke up in the morning, like I do. I walked downstairs into my basement. Don't remember why I was walking down there. And as I walked down the stairs, so you walk down the stairs and right in front of you is a wall, because there's a bathroom on the other side of that wall. There was an office to the right, and then we had sort of a multi-purpose storage, kids' play area off to the left. And I was walking into that play area, the garage was through there, and as I hit that last step, out of the corner of my eye, I caught this, it was like a little sheen on the floor of the office that I hadn't seen before. Now, it was still kind of dark, because when you have kids, kids wake you up really early in the morning. So it's still kind of dark, and maybe I hadn't had my coffee yet at this point. And so I kind of ignored it, but in the back of my mind, I kept thinking, why does it look odd over in that? Is there something going on there that I need to inspect a little closer? So after I did maybe take the garbage out into the garage, after I finished that, I decided, let me walk into the office. And here is what I discovered. I have a picture for you of what I discovered in the office. Oh, well, don't worry about that one. This sermon's titled Behind the Walls. But here we go. This was the office. A little bit of water on the floor of the office. And I'm going to have to deal with this now. So I proceeded into the office, and the door into the bathroom, you have to go through the office in order to get into the bathroom. So I kind of walked around, I put some boots on, and I realized that this handle that this sermon series is brought to you by was depressed, and the toilet was like a geyser with all this water just flowing out of the toilet onto the bathroom floor and right there into the office, which at that point I said, I am going to throw these shoes out. The shower, there's a shower in that bathroom as well, a drain on the floor. Water was pouring out of there as well. So I quickly pushed the lever back, stopped the water from flowing, but obviously the damage had been done by this point. Now, I had a shop vac, so I said, well, maybe I can clean this up myself, but then I realized, this is sewage water. Maybe I better not clean this up myself. So you start Googling, like you do, when you need to find someone who can come and pump water out of your basement. First couple of companies that I called, yeah, we can get there next week. What do you mean next week? I have water. This has to be addressed today. Finally found a company that said, we can get there tomorrow, which still didn't really help, considering there was all this water on the floor and it was continuing to spread. And I said, listen, I need you guys to get here today. They said, all right, well, we'll come by this afternoon. We'll take a look at it. We'll see if we can pump the water out. Well, by the time that they got there, most of the water had already subsided. They came, they looked at it. They said, we'll be here first thing tomorrow, and we'll address this for you. Next morning, they come. They put a curtain up, piece of plastic from the basement to the rest of the house in order to contain the area. They started ripping up the floor in the office. And then they put these massive dehumidifiers and a dryer in that office area in order to pull out any extra moisture and to dry the floor. Now, they had these things going for a while. And notice that they just floor, walls, I mean, they did some damage, did they not? And they had these machines running. These things were so loud. For the next 4 days that they were plugged in, I could not sleep. Just that constant hum. You thought your refrigerator was bad. These things are like 10 times the volume, the decibel level of a refrigerator. They come, they do their thing. Then I call another company. And this was an environmental inspection company. And I said, I want you to test to make sure that everything was done properly. So he comes in And we're in the middle of COVID when this happened, so he's got his mask on, and it's really hard to meet people when you're wearing a mask. But he comes into the house, we talk, I explain what's happened. He says, all right, I'm going to do some tests. I have a bunch of tools, and I'm going to do some tests. So he walks into the bathroom, and he grabs his moisture meter. And here's what we find with the bathroom tiles. You see that? Now, I know most of you, probably none of you, have a moisture meter, but does this look good? No. He does this everywhere around the bathroom. First off, if you notice, the floor looks pretty gnarly still, does it not? And then in all the cracks and all the corners of the bathroom, moisture is at 99%. He says, they didn't do a very good job. Your bathroom has to be gutted as well. And while you're at it, I have tons of pictures. I have folder after folder of pictures. While you're at it, some of the walls that were touched by the sewage water, they need to be ripped out as well because the moisture reading for the wood over here, well, it's very high as well. You have to get rid of that wood. They did just a partial job. You have to actually gut pretty much your entire basement. So we go from a small flood to, if we go to the next slide, please, this. This is what my basement looked like when they had finished some of the work. And there's that infamous toilet right there in your bottom left. I had to save this piece because I was investigated by the fraud department of the insurance company because they saw the size of these bills. They're like, what is going on here? So I had to do recorded statements. They came to the house. I tell you, I woke up that morning when they were going to come. I was so nervous. I'm like, I'm being investigated. What did I do? I promise. It's all legit. So here's what our bathroom looked like. The entire basement, completely, completely gutted. Now, if you know the story about what happened, you know that it didn't actually stop here. It continued throughout the entire house. One thing spread to another, and the scope of work, the scope of demo just increased by the day. Every single day I was hearing, you got to take care of this. Oh, your ventilation system. Yeah, mice are nesting in that thing. Here's a couple of pictures of the mice that are nesting here. There's mold here. There's asbestos here. So we were out of the house for 9 months and gutted a huge amount. Must be really dry in here. A huge amount of our entire house. 9 months. And when you have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, that's really, really difficult. So luckily, my in-laws live down the road. We were able to stay with them for the 9 months. And we were going to move back. I made it my goal. We're going to be back by December. The goal kept getting pushed back. I thought Memorial Day, which, yeah, right. Then it was 4th of July. Then it was Labor Day. Like, it just kept moving back and back. Then it was Christmas, and we were going to hit our target. And then I was knocked out with COVID for a couple of days, and it went through our entire family, and we made it back by December the 30th. But what a year. Oh my goodness. And so I look back on that year, and here's the thing. When you go through a year like that, you have to mine the year for the wisdom that it leaves you with. The year can't be a total loss. I mean, because we all go through moments. Maybe not quite like this, but we all have our moments where life just totally gets flipped upside down. Moments that we wouldn't wish upon anyone else. Moments that, oh, we look back on it. I hope I never have to go through anything else like that again. But the real gift is looking back on those times, those events, those moments, and asking, well, what's the wisdom that I learned from that time in my life? What was the spirit trying to speak? What can I carry forward with me into the next part of life? And there were so many lessons that I learned, and that's what I want to talk about over the next couple of weeks. What were the lessons that I've come to discover through 9 months of just utter exhaustion and hearing, hey, we got to deal with this too, and it's going to cost this much money, so pull your checkbook out one more time. Now, last year, we did a couple series. One series we did on the Beatitudes, and one series we did on the seven woes of Jesus. And what I find really interesting about the Beatitudes and about these seven woes of Jesus is this continual insistence that Jesus has on the power of your inner life. Because we all have an external life. It's the things that everyone else can see. It's the things that you can look at in a mirror, the things that you can physically touch and see and taste, the things that you can feel that you know are real and they exist. But then for every single one of us, there exists this inner life. You can't necessarily quantify it. You can't physically put a hand upon it. And not everyone can see it. There's parts of yourself, of that inner life that you possess, that are even hidden to you as well. And so Jesus keeps making this, he keeps insisting, hey, you got to pay attention to that which is within, to that which is unseen, which lies under the surface or behind the walls, because there is power in your inner life. It's from the inner life where everything flows from us. Here's Jesus in the Beatitudes. This is Matthew chapter 5. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Pure in heart? Those who live an undivided life, where that external that everyone else can see is no different than the inner, the internal. So what's inside is just effortlessly flowing outside. You don't have to put on a show, put on a mask. Blessed are those who live an undivided life, for they will experience God. Now we get to the seven woes, and in the seven woes, there are two of these statements that Jesus makes about the inner life. So if there's seven statements, two of them are about the inner life, two out of seven, that's a pretty good percentage, is it not? There's something very specific. Jesus is being very intentional about what he's saying here. We can go to the next slide. Matthew 23. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees. You clean the outside of the cup and the dish. Everything on the outside, you clean up. The way you present yourselves to others, well, it's great. You appear pious, like you have it all together. You've taken a shower. You put on a fresh pair of clothes. But inside, you're still full of greed and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisee, first, clean the inside of the cup and the dish, and then the outside will also be clean. Pay attention to your inner life. Address the inner workings of yourself, and then the external will just effortlessly flow from there. Next statement Jesus makes, the next woe. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You are like whitewashed tombs. Which again, I mean, it's like he's saying the same thing here. I remember when I was doing the sermon series, we got to this one right off the heels of the week before, and I'm like, what am I going to say that's any different than last week? This is exactly what Jesus said in the previous statement. You look beautiful on the outside, but inside, full of the bones of the dead and everything unclean. The outside is beautiful. It's whitewashed. There's no blemish. There's no mark or anything, but on the inside, everything unclean resides there. In the same way, on the outside, you appear to people righteous, but on the inside, you're full of hypocrisy and wickedness. This is how it works, is it not? We spend so much time, so much effort in how we present ourselves to others. If you're on social media, it's all about, well, I'm going to have the right social media page and the right post, conversations with people. I'll talk to people about this, but, well, there's other parts here that I'd rather keep hidden. There's things that I'll pray and ask God for, but then there's other things that I'm just not going to bring up because maybe if I just kind of push them to the side, well, then God will just forget that they're there as well. So there's a part of us that's seen. There's a part of us that we clean up, but then within, there's this hidden life that exists. See, I saw the truth of this firsthand last year going through everything we did with our house. It started, we go to the next slide. It started with some water in the basement. I was going to pump this water myself. I was going to grab my shop vac and take care of it myself. I mean, I think I have a picture, again, the picture we saw before. That's not that much water, right? You look at that, you're like, ah, whatever. We'll deal with it in a couple of days. We'll get it taken care of. But then some little water turned into this because of that which was lurking within. Time and time again, the people who are working at the house, they would say this statement to me and to my wife. The house looks so clean. It had a fresh coat of paint on it, right? You can just cover up all these blemishes with a fresh coat of paint. But then to go to the next slide, here's what was underneath. This was under the ceiling. I'm not sure if it's hard to see, but that's black mold all over the wood panels. I remember they took the ceiling down because we were going to replace the ceiling. We're like, oh, you know, we want to change the ceiling. We want to sheetrock the ceiling, so we'll get rid of that nasty popcorn ceiling from the 70s that we don't like in the house. And then later on, they met with us. They're like, hey, just so you know, your wood is covered in black mold. Lurking under the surface were these dangerous pathogens in the house. Now, it was unseen to us. It was hidden, but yet it was there. And one of the things that I got really, really good at over the past year was reading mold air sample reports. Like, if you have a problem and you have a mold air sample report, bring it to me because I will help you work through it. I promise you. I can't tell you how many times I've seen them. We go to the next slide. Here's what they look like. So each 1, 2, 3, 4 is a different sample that was taken. It shows where it was, so mudroom, lower level, and then it lists all the different mold spores, and then it'll give you a number. And anything that was in blue, you can see the stacky botrys came up a little bit. Anything in blue, that's that nasty black mold, the stuff that you don't want. You don't want any of that in your house. But then if you look the third one down, Aspergillus penicillium, over there in the crawl space, AHU is our air handling unit, which means all of our ventilation ducts were running through the crawl space, and there were gaps, there were holes in there, which means that when the air was blowing through there in order to be supplied into the rest of the house, it was pulling in mold spores and then releasing it into the house. So we were breathing all this, and the thing about mold is you can't actually see it. It's there, it exists, it has this power, but you can't see it. Unless you test for it, you don't know it's there. It's the same with your inner life. Your inner life has this power, but so often it goes unseen. It's hidden. It's behind the surface. We push it to the side. Others don't necessarily see it. I mean, look at that number of Aspergillus. That's right there in the, pink, red, significantly higher than baseline. In other words, yeah, you don't want a number like this. You want baseline or you want even lower. And you don't want any of that nasty black mold stuff. That chatamomium or whatever, we had so much of that on this one wall. Oh, my goodness. And when I saw the numbers, it's like, okay, we got to get rid of that. We got to pull that wall down. And then here's another thing I got really good at reading, which, trust me, you don't want to get good at reading these documents. Asbestos air samples. And here's the thing that you don't want to see. So in the top here, this was master bedroom attic, main duct, none detected. That's a great thing, right? Like, hey, there's no asbestos in that duct. But then you get down, chrysotile. That's a type of asbestos. You do not want to see this when it comes to your ventilation system. When they're swabbing your ventilation system, you do not want to see that there are asbestos tiles in the system that circulates the air that you're breathing. Am I right in this? Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. That's how it works. There's so much under the surface, so much behind the walls, under our skin that we carry around with us, and it's unseen. It's hidden. Now, there is a warning that our environmental inspector gave me every single time that we wanted to run another test, and here's what he said. Don't test unless you're going to act on the results. I mean, brilliant advice, is it not? Don't test unless you're going to act on the result. In other words, if you test and you find asbestos in the ventilation system, well, you're going to want to deal with it. You're not going to say, oh, yeah, that's great. Glad I know that. No, you're probably going to do something about it. Oh, I should have shown the picture. I don't have it. Maybe next week I will. We had two air handling units, so we had I don't even know how many feet of ductwork. We ripped all of that out, and you should see the pile. I have a picture of it. I'll show it next week. There, it's just like a pile of ducks just in the backyard. And they were just sitting there for 2 weeks because they ripped it all out. Now, this is true for the environmental world, but this is true for your inner life as well. He would always tell me, seek and you shall find. So here's the truth about the inner life. When you go poking around, when you go prodding around in your inner life, well, tread carefully. Tread carefully. You have no idea what you might drag up. You have no idea what you're carrying around with you. There's things that maybe you've been carrying with you for years, for decades, stories, conversations, events, experiences that you've held within for years. Be extremely, extremely careful as you're navigating your inner life. So as I was thinking about this sermon, there were three questions that came to mind when it comes to your inner life. So the first question is this. Why would I want to peer into my inner life? We just had this warning. Don't test unless you're going to address what you find. Tread carefully. Seek and you shall find. See, for many of us, it's like, hey, it's all good. Life's good. I'm okay. Everything seems to be working fine for me. Why would I want to dig anything up? I've buried things that I just don't want to deal with. There's no reason why I would actually want to drag this to the surface and then have to deal with it, because the truth is, when you're working with your inner life, it gets messy. It's complicated. It's not simple. There's a reason you've pushed it down. There's a reason it's in the back recesses of the closet. Having to actually bring it to the surface, inspect it, deal with it, look at it, and then address it, I mean, that's messy work. Who has time for that kind of work? Maybe for some of us, we're like, hey, I have enough on my plate already. Now I have to actually emotionally invest in my life? No, thank you. That doesn't seem appealing. Or for others, we're like, well, there's nothing there. There's no reason for me to go digging around because there's just nothing there. But here's the truth. Why would I want to peer into my inner life? I would make the argument, it's to see what you're carrying around with you. I mean, who knows how much weight you're dragging behind you? Let's take an issue that not many of us deal with, the issue of unforgiveness. Now, I know not many of you have forgiveness issues. I know only a small percentage. We can go to the next slide. Keep going on the next slide. There we go. There's this great quote. I'm not sure who first gave the quote, but to forgive is to set a prisoner free and discover that the prisoner was you. I love that. So often we think, well, I'm not going to forgive them because I want them to know how much harm they've inflicted on me. I want them to know how much pain they have caused me. But here's the truth. When we're harboring unforgiveness, very often that person is living their life and they're not even thinking about you. You think that you're going to hold on to this grudge, this resentment, and it's going to bring them down. But the truth is, they're off partying in Disney World, and you are the last thought on their mind. And so the person that unforgiveness is harming, it's you. It's me. It's us. So when we begin to forgive, and we've talked about this a lot here at Awaken, because forgiveness is a process. It doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't even happen in the span of a year. It can take years and years. You take one small step. Sometimes then you take two steps backwards. You take one small step whenever you can. You open your heart to love and to forgiveness and to grace. And the truth is, as we forgive, we realize that the prisoner we're setting free is ourselves. And the thing that I love about forgiveness, I came across this study a couple of years ago, and this just blew my mind. It found out that once people forgive, once we take that step into forgiveness, you can actually jump higher. Isn't that a beautiful illustration? When you are holding on to unforgiveness, it literally weighs you down. Literally, you are carrying excess weight around with you. This is true for unforgiveness, but what about, we can go to the next slide, what about resentment, bitterness, disappointment, when it's not addressed and spoken out loud? How about numbing things? I mean, we have really good ways of numbing our pain. We've all figured out how to do that well. The past hurts, the scars, the nicks that we've all taken, that we've just, again, put a fresh coat of paint over. Everything looks so clean. Everything looks great. But meanwhile, behind the walls, what's lurking within? Yeah, it has a power. I mean, we all know that person. Whenever you bring up a story or an idea or a topic, they get really, really defensive. Or they react in a certain way. You say something, and there should be some sort of a reaction, but they just jump. We all know that person that when you mention something, they just completely shut down. They leave the conversation. You know, so often we are unaware of how we're responding to things that people say or to events that have happened. Other people, they can notice, and we all look around, and we all know those people who get defensive, who get reactive. And we kind of, oh, what's there? What's going on? What did we just touch upon? What past hurt or pain are they carrying with them? And it just kind of got dragged to the surface through that one comment that was made. Yeah, whenever we carry these things around with us, the truth is they literally weigh us down. They rob us of joy. So why would we actually want to peer into our inner life? Is because we want to be set free. We want the salvation that Jesus talks about. We want freedom. We want life. And not just a life where you're just getting through and getting by, but rather a life of vitality. You want a life of joy, a life where you wake up every morning filled with gratitude for the gift of breath that you have been given. Yeah, that's what you're after. You want a life of abundance. You want this life where you have energy to actually pursue the things that you care about, the things that matter in life. You don't want to be weighed down by that resentment, that loop that you're just constantly going through, but rather you want to have space and energy to give to the best of yourself. So you can invest in this world and you can use all the gifts and the talents that God has given you for the goodness of this world, for the spreading of the grace and the love that you have been given. So why would you want to peer into your inner life? Because you want freedom. You want to be able to jump as high as those guys in the NBA. Yeah, you want to live a life of joy. So here's a second question. Okay, great. So then how, oh, and I mentioned on here health. I mean, how often does our health suffer because of what we're carrying around? So how is it then that we can peer into our inner life? Well, the truth is we need time and space. We need to create space in our calendar for this. It doesn't unintentionally happen. You have to be intentional about addressing the inner life. And then it happens by getting really good at silence, shutting out the noise, turning the TV off, turning off the Spotify playlist, just setting all the noise to the side, being okay, being comfortable, just sitting in silence, going for a walk in silence, grabbing a journal. And then questions, having a healthy dose of curiosity, being curious about yourself. You ever have a conversation and you're still thinking about it a week later? You ever get curious about that? Why does that conversation bother me so much? The comment that she made. Well, why am I still thinking about it? Why am I dragging it up 5 days later? It was a comment in passing, but obviously it was more than that because you're still thinking about it. So addressing your inner life starts by getting really curious about your own life. Why did I do that? huh, that's interesting. Why do I react like this every time that he asks me that? It starts by having a healthy dose of curiosity. There's an endless depth to our inner life. This is true for every single one of you. It's like the ocean. It just keeps going deeper and deeper. And just when you think you've hit the bottom, you realize, oh, there's a whole other layer here. So curiosity, questions, that is the path into discovering what it is that you are carrying around with you. And then you have to allow yourself to go to those places. And if you're not ready, that's okay. If you bring something up and you're like, ooh, okay, too tender to touch, great. Let's go and let's go to Chuck E. Cheese. Or let's go and just do something else for a while. I'm going to forget about this, and when the time is right, then I will return to it. But you have to allow yourself to go there, and you have to be ready. And sometimes we're just not ready, and that's okay. Because covering all of this is you have to approach your inner life with grace. You have to approach your own life with grace. We talk about the grace of God. And sometimes it can be really, really hard to trust that grace and to appreciate it. We know it intellectually, but to feel it and to experience it and to really trust it, that's a really difficult thing, especially when there's parts about ourselves that we don't like. And the truth is, we're all there. Every single one of us has parts about ourselves that we don't like, stories that we're ashamed of, things that we wish weren't true. And so we have to approach our entire life with grace. We have to be kind to ourselves. The same love that we would want to show another person, well, we have to show ourselves that same love as well. So it starts by being really kind to yourself and filled with grace. Now, a third question for us would be, okay, well, what do I then do with what I discover? So why would I discover it? Because I want life. I want freedom. How do I discover it? Silence, questions, grace. But then what do I do with what I discover? I've been journaling now. I've been getting really curious about why I do this, and I actually have a bit more awareness. Okay, well, what do we now do with the things? Remember, don't test unless you're going to address that which you discover. So what do we do with it? Well, the first thing I would say is you own and acknowledge. You own and acknowledge all the parts that you find, including the things that you don't like about yourself. All the warts, the blemishes, the things that are there that you wish weren't there, you own them and say, yep, this is true about me. You acknowledge and say, I've been carrying this around with me, and I'm going to own it. I'm going to speak it. And then, we'll do this. I say here, you got to use the right tool. Here's what I mean by that. So these guys were in our house for 9 months, and they used a whole bunch of different tools to clean the house. So at first, and can we have a little volume for this one? So at first, there was asbestos in the glue on the floor of the basement that they had to get up in order so that we could have a level floor again. So they had to use these small little hand chisels. This was a painstaking process. Watch them trying to get this glue up from the floor of our basement. All right, we can pause that. Could you imagine that? Could you imagine that? On your hands and knees, it took about a week to scrape this. This is a very delicate process. Sometimes that's what it requires for you. You have to be very, very delicate because there's parts that are extremely tender and painful. And we bring them up. We can't blast our way through them because if we were to do that, well, we might really hurt ourselves. But then other times, it requires a different tool in order to clean a house or to address your inner workings. You can go one more slide. And here's another method of cleaning our house that they used.
Maryland Avenue, lower level. This is the office. You can park it beyond
All right, we can pause that. Okay, this method, dry ice blasting. Carbon dioxide pellets, and these things were in like sub-zero temperatures. They had this giant hopper that fed the carbon dioxide pellets into this machine, and then they blasted. They literally scarified is the term that they used. They literally blasted the mold off of the wood with these hard carbon dioxide pellets that they shot at the wood all around the entire basement. Absolutely insane. I had never heard of this process before. Crazy, is it not? So sometimes it takes a little more work when you're dealing with your inner life. Sometimes you need a chisel because there's parts of you that are delicate and tender. But sometimes you need those carbon dioxide pellets and you need to blast your way through. You got to break down the wall a little bit. But the truth is, what's the result? What's the outcome that we're all looking for? We can go to the next slide. One more slide. Here's what the wood looked like after they were done with it. You see how clean that wood is? So we went from black mold all over the ceiling to wood that looked like it was brand new. And I had people that came in the house, they're like, oh my goodness, this job that these guys did, amazing. Amazing. You can't even tell if there's any mold growing there. See, what we all want is we all want to feel clean. We all want to be free from those hidden pathogens, the hidden things that are weighing us down. We want freedom. We want the inside of our life to be clean so that that life flows from us to the world around us. All the blackness that we're carrying with us, we want to be free from it so we can live that life of joy and freedom. So you own and acknowledge, we can go back one slide, we own and acknowledge, sometimes it's just an awareness. Oh, I didn't realize, now that I know this about myself, I can be more aware of it. And that's really, really helpful. The more aware you are of why you react certain ways or why you do certain things, then sometimes you bring someone else into it, a trusted friend. Hey, you know what? Can we go grab coffee? There's some things that came up and I need to share it with someone. I need someone just to talk it through with. I need someone else to be with me in this so I don't have to carry this alone. And then other times, you need a professional. I remember in 2017, I had a period of burnout, and I started seeing a professional therapist at that point. It's a practice that I have continued since then, and it has been so helpful to have someone just sit there and listen and be like, yeah, you're not abnormal. And just to be able to share things that, hey, this is what happened, this is what I'm feeling, and I just need someone to help me process through it, someone who has some training in it. And I continue that practice on a regular basis because I don't want to carry everything by myself. I feel the weight that places on me, and I just don't want to do it. And it's been so freeing, such a freeing experience for me. So that's a bit about your inner life. And my prayer for all of you is that you would tread lightly and that you would experience lightness as you peer into that which is behind the walls. Let me pray for us. God, we come to you this morning. And God, I thank you for these teachings of Jesus. God, these sermons that Jesus gave, his insistence, his continual insistence on the power of our inner life. So God, I pray that for all of us here this morning, that we would be people who would be courageous. God, that we would be people who would be willing to peer into our inner life. God, as we do so, as we tread lightly, I ask that we would give ourselves tremendous grace. And God, I pray that, God, that as we look into our inner workings, that we would truly discover an awareness, a greater awareness of who we are. God, a greater awareness of our need for you, of our need for your grace. God, your unconditional grace and favor that's over us. God, and I pray that your spirit would meet us in all of these moments. God, that we would know that we're not alone. And I pray that we would come to discover a life of joy, a life of vitality. God, that any weights that we've been carrying around with us, anything that's been holding us down, God, that we would find freedom from that weight. That we would discover the freedom that you offer, God, the salvation that you bring. So may we come to discover that salvation in greater depths. So we ask all this in the name of Jesus. Amen.